following is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCAST.com.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 198, a Galactic Network podcast. I'm Dave Nelson, along with Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Hello, you two.
Hello.
What's going on in Wisconsin land?
Well, it's been pretty rainy around here. The leaves have turned and are starting to fall, and that means yard waste cleanup stuff. Woohoo.
Yay!
I'm just plowing them down with the lawnmower. But now we're having mower issues, so I'm probably going to have to rake the rest.
Damn it.
I know, I hate leaves. Well, actually, I don't hate them so long as they're on their trees. It's when I have to clean them up that I hate leaves.
Once they fall, it's a different story.
It is. That and pine needles. In Texas, I didn't have to deal with this crap because everything was dead.
That's the state slogan, right? Welcome to Texas.
Everything is dead.
Everything is dead. All right. Thanks to Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. It's a song called Alien Syndrome. You can find it at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol. And this is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe. You know, not humanoids on or from planet Earth, and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and real life. We're going to start with a question for you two. Do you believe alien abduction stories that were revealed through hypnosis? Of course, the most famous of them all is Betty and Barney Hill. That kind of kicked it all off. But do you guys believe in the things that people say under hypnosis, that people that believe they were abducted?
I think it depends on the hypnotherapist.
Okay.
Because I've seen recordings or sessions or whatever that people have posted that have shown up in documentaries. And the hypnotherapists can be very leading, I suppose. So they'll ask a question, and rather than say, "What do you see?" it's like, "Where do you see that light?"
Mm-hmm.
Or like if the person makes a comment that like, "I see a light," and they're like, "Where above your vehicle do you see the light?" Like they automatically put a place where this object or light or whatever it may be is. And it could be a light that was initially on the ground. It could have been like somebody's headlight. And suddenly they've messed with this poor person's mind and had them thinking that it would be like up in the air. So I think it really depends on the person giving the hypnotherapy and the types of questions that they ask if they're trying to lead them somewhere. Like, how loud was the humming sound that you heard? When the person never mentioned anything about any sounds. So now they're like, "Oh, well, it was very loud," or "It was very quiet." And you know, I think without maybe like a transcript or something or a video of the types of questions that were asked, it's really hard to say. I would be kind of skeptical of any stories or memories that came out of the session. Just so, for that reason, the questions can be very directional.
Okay.
Influential.
All right.
I don't know what's a good word for that.
No, I get what you're trying to say. Brad, what do you think about this?
Anessa and I are of a like mind on that.
Okay. Would you believe people more if they actually remember it without being hypnotized?
It's one of those things where it always kind of boils down to proof. And we have reached a point where eyewitness accounts no longer even work in trials. You know, it's very much what other physical evidence do you have? So I think I've become a little jaded in that respect, in that the mind is a very powerful thing that can be easily molded and shaped, and you don't even realize that it's being done. So I think through no fault of anybody's own, you can interject or place things in somebody's mind, especially when they're in a hypnotized state, to alter that memory.
Okay.
And the other thing too is if a person, say they do remember an experience of being abducted, it's just one of those things. You don't know if it's like a genuine memory or maybe something that the mind has created to kind of deal with an event that has happened. Sort of a coping mechanism.
Kind of like Hawkeye in the final episode of MASH, where he thought he was making the chicken be quiet, but really it was a baby.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that. So I guess it really just depends on the individual. But yeah, like Brad says, like everybody wants proof, and even like eyewitness testimony isn't necessarily going to be listened to, taken seriously.
Basically, what we're saying is pictures or didn't happen.
And even those can be photoshopped.
Okay.
They could videotape the whole session where we can make that determination for ourselves if, you know, there were leading questions or whatever. That would be better than just somebody's say-so after a hypnosis session.
Like, yeah, I totally experienced this. And they, I'm sure, genuinely believe that that's what they experienced, but it might not actually be real.
In the news.
Nessa, you got the first story.
I do. And guess who's in it?
Scott Waring.
Joe the Plumber.
Yes.
Well, Joe?
Joe the Plumber is in this story, along with Scott C. Waring.
What?
So, a UFO hunter claims to have caught the European Space Agency attempting to cover up the presence of a gigantic 62-mile alien UFO space station lurking deep in space near Lutetia? I don't know if that's how it's pronounced.
It is now.
It is now. So Lutetia, a large asteroid located in our solar system's asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. The UFO hunter claims that he discovered the alien UFO megastructure floating in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter by, quote, adding light to an image of Lutetia published by the ESA, the European Space Agency. UFO blogger Scott C. Waring announced this incredible discovery in an October 14th post to his Weird UFO Sightings Daily blog. I like how they describe it as weird. According to a statement by the ESA in its official website, the image shows the stunning silver of the large main belt asteroid Lutetia, photographed by the Rosetta spacecraft passing on its way to comet 67P Churyumov-Gerasimenko. Rosetta, according to ESA, had flown past another asteroid called Steins in 2008. The image is one of hundreds of high-resolution photos of Lutetia that the Rosetta spacecraft captured with its optical spectroscope and infrared remote imaging system, known as OSIRIS, when it passed Lutetia on July 10th, 2010, according to the ESA. This image was taken as Rosetta had passed its closest approach at just under 3,170 kilometers from Lutetia's surface and was beginning its journey away from the asteroid, the ESA explained. As a result of this flyby, astronomers have been able to characterize Lutetia, viewing the wide range of craters and geological features scarring the asteroid's surface. These measurements showed that Lutetia is primordial, likely having just formed just under 4 billion years ago during the very early phases of the solar system. But according to Waring, after he had modified the original dark ESA image by lightening it up, a gigantic rectangular 62-mile artificial structure, which appears to have been an alien UFO spaceship or space station, emerged suddenly from the shadows behind Lutetia. According to Waring, the image shows the alien UFO megastructure was at least about the same size as the 100-kilometer asteroid. Thus, Waring was able to estimate that the UFO was at least 100 kilometers or 62 miles across. In case you're wondering how he came up with that number. Waring then accused the ESA of deliberately concealing the massive alien space station in the photo by darkening as part of the alleged policy of covering up evidence of extraterrestrial life and advanced alien UFOs in our solar system. And according to alien and UFO hunters, the world's top space agencies, including NASA, ESA, the Russian Roscosmos, the Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency, and the China National Space Administration, are united in a global conspiracy to hide the truth about extraterrestrial life from the world's people. But thanks to eagle-eyed UFO hunters such as Scott C. Waring, the alien/UFO cover-up conspiracy is being exposed.
Thank God.
I know. They didn't realize that some of us would uncover it so fast, Waring commented. The ESA states that asteroid Lutetia is 100 kilometers across. And if the UFO is the same size, then it is also 100 kilometers across. Makes you want to rethink what we think an alien starship would be like, huh? But on several occasions, NASA has denied accusations that it is hoarding vital information about extraterrestrial life. NASA has repeatedly refuted claims that it doctors images to conceal evidence of alien beings and UFOs. The agency has also denied persistent allegations that it shuts down live transmission from the International Space Station when UFOs appear on the live stream. You can read more about this story and more of Scott C. Waring's quotes that I cut out because it was getting even more redundant at theinquisitor.com.
I've noticed that the Inquisitor will repeat the information.
They're incredibly redundant, and I tried to cut out as much as I could, but I missed some, and I'm sorry. But it was much worse.
I'm glad you cleaned it up a little bit there, Anessa.
Yeah, and because it's like, oh, let me tell you about this thing, and then we're going to post Scott C. Waring's quote that essentially says the same thing, and then we're going to repeat it again.
In case you missed it the first three times, here it is again.
In case you missed it or spaced out the first couple of times. But anyway, the ESA is covering up, along with the rest of the world space agencies, the existence of extraterrestrials.
Well, as we've learned from Donald J. Trump, it's a conspiracy. Everything's a conspiracy. So
it is.
His wig is a conspiracy. Well, it might not be a wig. His hair plugs, his hair. I don't know.
Whatever that is on his head.
It's an alien.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that his hair is actually this alien creature that's attached itself to his head and is bent on taking over the world with the help of Donald Trump's status and his money.
It's a symbiont, then, is what you're saying.
Yes.
So the real Donald Trump is not really in charge of the Donald Trump body.
Nope, he's just hanging out there, no control. He's just kind of watching his body be driven by something else, I'm sure.
Okay, that's a pretty good theory. I'm going to go with that one as well. Okay, so back to the story. Do you guys believe Scott C. Waring?
No, it's an artifact. And when you purposely jack up the brightness of a picture that is black, it manufactures artifacts. It tries to manufacture data. And that's exactly what's happened here, because this quote unquote UFO looks like a big rectangular box with little, it's ridiculous. The fact that he's even trying to remotely fob this off as a UFO is absolutely ludicrous. I'm willing to go along with some of Scott C. Waring's stuff and maybe laugh at a few things, but this is just utter crap.
All right. You heard it from Brad. It's utter crap.
Sorry, Scott.
That's my takeaway. It's full of crap.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com, or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Netcasts on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
There is a War of the Worlds series coming to TV. You guys pretty excited about this?
I don't know. Well,
keep talking.
Yeah, let's get the full prospectus here.
You need more evidence, eh?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Sell me on this.
So the TV adaptation will be written by former Teen Wolf writer Andrew Cochran. That show's been on for a while. I never realized how long or how many years it's been on. It's been on several seasons. It's amazing. Yeah. Also executive produced by its creator, executive producer Jeff Davis, as well as The Firm's Josh Berry. And this is kind of a cool little story. Doing a new series based on H.G. Wells' 1898 book has been a passion project for Berry, whose grandfather, Gene Berry, was the star of the first War of the Worlds screen adaptation, the 1953 Paramount movie. So it's kind of staying in the family.
A bit, yeah.
Overall, there's been about a dozen film and TV adaptations of the book, most notably the 2005 Paramount movie directed by Steven Spielberg and starring Tom Cruise. Did you guys like that version of the story?
Never saw it.
Really?
Nope.
Anessa, have you seen it?
I'm trying to think. I did see it. I didn't hate it.
But they changed a major part of the story.
They did, but I've really been trying hard over the years to like disconnect the new versions from the old versions. If you take it on its own and don't compare it to the original, it's not bad. It's not like the greatest thing ever, but like I said, I didn't hate it.
Okay, that's a good way of going about things sometimes.
Sometimes you have to, because if not, I find myself comparing things and be like, well, that's not what happened. That's not how it's supposed to be. Why are they doing this? This is dumb. The original is better.
Do you do it with book adaptations as well, like a book that you've read?
I do. I've gotten to the point to where if I've read a book recently and like a movie comes out shortly after, I won't watch the movie until like way later. Because if the book is fresh in my mind, I end up being overly critical.
Okay.
And it's hard not to be, in my opinion.
All right.
So, but if there's enough time for me to kind of let things soak in and then forget a few things and then go into the movie with like a fresher mind, then yeah, I actually kind of prefer watching the movie and then reading the book now, just for that reason. If I know that the movie's coming up pretty quick, I'm like, oh, that's a book. I want to read that.
I heard a great theory or a great way of thinking about this. You watch the movie first, and usually they don't put the whole book in a movie. So
exactly.
You're getting more of the story when you read the book after watching the movie.
You get questions answered and see what changes. And
there you go.
Yeah.
Speaking of books, the novel, the original War of the Worlds, shot up in popularity following the famous or infamous Orson Welles' 1938 radio adaptation, which presented the story as a series of fake news bulletins reporting of an actual Martian invasion in progress, which caused panic among its listeners. So I'm looking forward to this. I hope they do a good job. I think it's only been adapted into TV once before. When I was doing some research on the story, the original article where I got it from, I believe it was Blaster, they mentioned a Canadian series back in the 90s.
Yes, and it was the first season was really good. And then the original aliens were taken and over and destroyed by another group of aliens, and then it kind of went downhill from there.
Okay. I'm going to have to try to find that because I'm curious. I'd like to watch that.
It was very, very interesting because in order to keep the bacteria and diseases away, they would take host bodies and then they would surround themselves by nuclear waste, which would cause their host bodies to slowly decay. So by the end of the season, they were kind of wearing hazmat suits because their bodies were completely falling apart.
Ah, well, that'll happen, right?
Absolutely, it will.
That's a thing. And we're coming up on Halloween, which is, we were talking about this before we started recording the podcast tonight. They aired that radio drama on October 30th of 1938. So on Halloween Eve is when they freaked the bejesus out of the public.
All Hallows Eve.
We'll keep this on our radar and we'll report back any more details or updates that we have on the War of the Worlds TV show.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
Brad, you have the final news story here on this edition of the Alien Invasion, don't you?
I believe that I do. And I think that we are going to have another telescope that is going to allow us to hunt for alien life. Now, this particular telescope is going to be collecting data from our closest neighbor, Alpha Centauri, and it's called Project Blue. Excuse me, the project, which hopes to launch a lightweight telescope into Earth orbit by 2019, was announced October 11th. The two stars of Alpha Centauri, along with the associated red dwarf star Proxima Centauri, are the closest stars outside of our solar system. And the Alpha Centauri stars are by far the closest sun-like stars to Earth's system. While the dual system makes imaging a challenge, the star's extraordinary closeness means that a relatively small and inexpensive space telescope could potentially view them directly. The project would consist of two high-altitude balloon flights testing similar instruments with NASA's support, and then a satellite with a refrigerator-sized telescope slash instrument package would be sent into space between and be in operation between the years 2019 to 2022, collecting data. Now, Space.com reported on a talk last year by Ruslan Belikov, an astronomer based at NASA's Ames Research Center in California, about methods for imaging Alpha Centauri to search for a planet. This effort comes with unique challenges because of the potentially complex orbit of a planet around two stars and the need to block out the light of both stars to spot any planetary specks. They hope to use similar methods. They want to use deformable mirrors and star shades to cancel out the star's glare. Now, the project is a gamble, and it requires making fiendishly difficult measurements.
Okay, stop the story for a second.
Sorry, yes.
You used the word fiendishly.
I did.
That's awesome.
You don't really use that in a story very much.
No,
that's
you don't.
That's an excellent adjective that I don't think gets a lot of play.
Well done to the blog writer of this story.
And when you say the word fiendishly, you need...
And you need to take your fingers like the evil villain in movies and TV shows.
And go.
Yeah, rub your hands together like that if you're watching the video. Okay.
Okay. Enough of that.
I love how we take a serious story about, like, a serious science story and just take a left turn and start talking about... evil villains and how
you know what you need to do. You need to rub your hands together and laugh. Yes, it's exactly what you need to do when you use the adjective fiendishly. But it's possible to do Project Blue relatively inexpensively due to the star's lucky location, and it'd have the potential to reveal Earth-like Earth-like planet very close to home, orbiting a star like ours, even in a much more complicated star system. If all went well, they'd be poised to catch sight of blue and greenish wavelengths, just enough to tell if any planet around Alpha Centauri is indeed a pale blue dot like Earth viewed from afar. Just a visible light detection can tell researchers about the planet's mass and a little bit of its composition. Reflectivity could indicate clouds, for instance. So there you go.
You know how last episode I had a song to go with one of the stories that we were talking about?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have one again. Here it is.
Nice.
There it is. Okay. Just enough that you hear it and not too much to get us knocked off YouTube.
Just a little taste.
Yeah.
Just a little taste.
Makes me think of like, name that tune.
No, this is a very fascinating story. I love how our science, we're putting so much time and effort into search for extraterrestrial life, like on all different like levels, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got all these
microscopic.
Well, that and also like organizational wise, like you got private companies. You got that initiative project with the Russian guy and Stephen Hawking.
Project Starshot?
No, not Starshot. It's another one. But Starshot is kind of related to it, but not really.
Yeah, it's Project Star something.
Okay. Anywho, my point was that we're putting a lot more, like the technology's getting better, and there's this big effort, this big concerted effort on all fronts to find alien life out there somewhere. And I think that with all the stuff that we're putting into it, I think we're going to find
it. Oh, there's Breakthrough Starshot.
Breakthrough Starshot. Thank you. No, Breakthrough Listen is what I was thinking about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's the other one.
So many.
Yep, Listen and Starshot.
So many names.
Yes.
So real quick question, just a ballpark. When do you think we will find alien light, like a signal? I know that you guys have nothing to base it on, but just your gut feeling.
2037.
That's very, very exact, Anessa.
That was the first number that popped in my head.
Okay. I'm writing it down. Anessa says 2037. Okay. We'll do a special episode that year. Welcome to the Alien Invasion episode. Well, the rate we're going, we skip weeks sometimes, so we'll be on episode 500 or something like that in 2037.
Episode 3952.
What do you think, Brad? When do you think we'll find extraterrestrial life? Not like microbial within our solar system, like maybe on Mars or on one of Saturn's moons, but like a signal from space.
Wow, I would say. No, I'll go with about 2030, in about 14 years.
Okay, we'll check.
And hopefully I'll still be alive.
We'll check back.
Okay.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
The Sci-Fi Survival Guide is a podcast like you've never heard before. It's a sort of audio feast, a theatre of the mind. You can find out more by going to www.gncasts.com/survive. Maybe you will find out how to survive a nuclear explosion, or maybe when the hordes of zombies come knocking at your door. Each month, we will take a popular science fiction scenario, and I will tell you how to survive. Be prepared at gncasts.com/survive.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black triangular
three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a zone. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was on circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
Time to check into the world of Close Encounters, UFO sightings. This is the sighting section. And we got this one from an actual listener. A listener of the show wrote in, aliens@gncast.com. It's Thomas Urso, and he writes, I'm an American expat living in Hanoi, Vietnam. About 1 year ago, I had my first contact abduction experience with, how do you pronounce that, do you think? Arcontic.
I'm trying to...
Arcontic entities.
Yes. I'll go with that for now. Arcontic entities. It remains an ongoing experience in that I'm still in contact with these entities who have made me fully aware of the hyperdimensional matrix control system and the game as it's been applied to my life and also that of my girlfriend. In my case, it seems to be caught in some state of halfway kundalini, not knowing if I should raise it, lower it, or ignore it. And this follows on the astral projection abilities I've inherited post-abduction. As a kind of shorthand, I have numerous entities attached and pulling me in all directions, along with body possession, ear hum, split brain effects, and all the rest that goes along with such experiences. I also have two shadow entities attached to the right and left side of my head, astrally. I suppose this somehow related to kundalini, or more likely to these negative entities hijacking and diverting my kundalini energy. In contrast, my girlfriend claims no memory of our shared experience over the past year, but shows all the signs of being under full arcontic control. This is basically where everything stands with me at present. I've spent hundreds of hours trying to remove these entities, pull cords, clear chakras, and I feel I've only made my situation worse by doing so. Aside from this, I've been through numerous situations, both real world and under abduction situations, which I'm only now beginning to write about nearly a year after my first contact with these entities. In my case, in writing about my ongoing experience, I'm looking to share what I know and learned thus far as a result of my awakening. And I'm looking to share with others who are experiencing similar awakenings, contact abductions. My circumstances are quite difficult in that until my post-contact experience, I didn't realize that the arcontic interference in my life dates back about a decade, if not to childhood, and has played a large role in destroying my marriage and family, as well as playing a role in engineering me into my present situation. That being a near-destitute writer in contact with and under the influence of arcontic entities and trying to find the right way to manage not only my life, but also a love-bite relationship. My second following the breakup of my marriage without my losing this relationship and the girl I love. In my case, because I believe my own ongoing experience and insights in dealing with these arcontic entities, shadows, cords, etc., that I cannot clear, along with my experiences in the real world, the matrix veil lifted will be of value to you in your own work. I invite you to visit my Facebook page. We'll put the link in the show notes. Thomas Urso, thank you very much for writing in. That's an interesting story.
That is very interesting.
There's a lot going on there.
Absolutely, there is.
That must get very frustrating at times, to have shadow entities with you at all times.
It would be hard to be alone, that's for sure.
I know. Just give me some space, man.
The silver lining is you can't be lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Just the amount of effort that he's said that he has spent trying to get rid of these entities, these beings.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of makes me wonder, though, if it is aliens. Like, I'm thinking more like spiritual, supernatural sort of.
Oh, okay.
Like,
Because I was thinking maybe some form of mental illness, possibly.
Well, it could be what he's going through is, you know, a legitimate thing that could look like mental illness.
Okay. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. And I can see the mental illness aspect. I can also see that maybe there is something going on that people would think is mental illness. And I'm sure he's heard that before. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you're just crazy. And that would have to be frustrating if, you know, like, since he's actually experiencing this and there's a lot of people that don't believe him. I'm like, how are you supposed to get help if no one believes you? You know? So, wild.
And I just want to clarify that all three of us have open minds. We believe anything is possible. So we're not saying that you have mental illness. We're not saying that it didn't happen. We're saying that it is possible that you are experiencing all these things, and it could be aliens or it could not be aliens.
For me, just the way that I perceived it, I saw it as more, like I mentioned before, more spiritual, I guess. More, there needs to be a priest.
Okay, maybe it's spirits pretending or masquerading as aliens. Maybe they're saying they're aliens, but they're not aliens.
Right. And the only thing that really makes me think that it would be something that isn't aliens, it could be more spiritual, supernatural, however you want to word it, would be how he's talking about how he's trying to remove these entities and clear chakras. And it only made his situation worse, which to me, if you're trying to clear your chakra, I don't know how these aliens are, like what kind of forms they are, but I don't think clearing your chakra would really do a whole lot to remove them. You know?
Well,
does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
I'm like, I don't know how to word it. Like, I don't know if that makes sense to people, but that's just how I see it. I think there needs to be some sort of other ritual or something to kind of get rid of these potentially evil spirits. They're certainly not positive because they are making his life more difficult.
So Thomas, if you're listening, please, you know, try to get some help from somebody else. And we want to say good luck and hopefully you'll get some help.
And maybe there's other people that have a similar experience and maybe they can reach out to him and they can form a support group and try to work through this.
I think that's part of the purpose of his Facebook page.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's great that he's reaching out, because the other thing too is a lot of people are afraid to put this sort of thing out there because then they are told that they are crazy. Who are we to judge?
If you would like to chat with the hosts or other listeners of this Galactic Network podcast 24 hours a day, go to gncast.com/signup. We'll add you to our Slack team so you'll have the ability to interact with us in real time. Again, go to gncast.com/signup.
All right, it's time to reveal our picks and or warnings, all related to aliens and extraterrestrials in some way. And it looks like I am going first. Anessa decided to not be a team player this week.
I decided to watch Timeless. It's not alien related, at least not as of yet, but it is sci-fi related, so there's that.
It's a good show. I've seen it. It's at least one episode of it. Yeah, so. It's good. Okay. My pick is Batman, The Brave and the Bold, Season 3, Episode 7, Sword of the Atom. Brad, have you seen Batman, The Brave and the Bold?
Yes. I know exactly the episode that you're talking about.
It's a good series, and it's funny. It's not that serious. It's more in the vein of like Batman... the 1960s series in the way they present things.
The Brave and the Bold was was an older comic book series. And that's how it kind of worked.
Yeah. And it was always a team up. And that's what this series is doing, is Batman teaming up with others. And in this episode, and I think, originally, The Brave and the Bold was not Batman. It was just DC characters. But it eventually became mainly Batman teaming up with other heroes, I think. I think that, I mean, I read an article about it a long time ago, and I seem to remember.
Yeah,
that.
I think it was team-ups, and then Batman was doing really well, so they made Batman the focus, and it was team-ups with Batman, and then later on they changed the focus of it again and highlighted other DC characters. So
this show was awesome because I don't know if this is every episode, but they have an opening and then they get into the main story. And the opening on this episode was a musical number in a spoof of a 1950s sitcom called The Curies or The Curries of Atlantis. It features Aquaman's entire family, including his wife and Aqualad.
My wife.
Aqualad and Black Manta. In the sitcom, Aquaman forgets about his wife's anniversary on the day he's supposed to go crime fighting with Batman. It's Tuesday. I gotta go fight crime with Batman. It's like boys' night out, and they fight crime. It's pretty cute. So the main story is, I'll just read it from the Wikipedia description. 2 years ago, Batman and the Atom, Ray Palmer, worked together to save themselves from villains like Cannoneer, Dwarf Star, and Thinker. Ray later retired and Ryan Choi takes up the mantle. 2 years later, Palmer's arch nemesis, Kronos, who we've seen on Legends of Tomorrow, plans an attack, and Batman goes looking for him. When Batman disappears, Aquaman and the Atom, Ryan Choi, must shrink to a microscopic size in the Amazon jungle to save the Caped Crusader and Ray Palmer from the tiny aliens called Catarthans, who are led by Chancellor Duragus. Or Duragus, or something like that. It's a great story. They all get shrunk down, and it's these aliens that are tiny. Their ship crashed in the Amazon, and Ray Palmer is in a relationship with the queen of this alien culture. And then there's, like, her number two and number three, like, conspire against Ray Palmer and Batman, try to get them killed, but then they team up. And they eliminate the threat, and they get shrunk back to normal size, and everybody lives happily ever after.
And that was an actual series that they did with the Atom.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. Yep. It was a book at one time.
Yes, it was a comic book series.
Do you know what year that was?
Pretty sure that was about the 70s.
Was it a Brave and the Bold story?
I'm checking it out here.
Because I'm starting to wonder that maybe all the stories in the series are from the original Brave and the Bold comic book series.
No. The series was Sword of the Atom.
Okay.
That's what it was. And that, oh boy. That started in 1983.
Okay. All right.
And it actually went on for, it was a 4-issue series. I apologize. It was a mini series. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I just dinged your phone, Brad.
Yep. No, that's fine.
I really enjoyed it. I definitely give my recommendation. It's on Netflix, at least in Canada. I don't know if it is on the U.S. Netflix or whatever Netflix you watch in the world. And check it out if you can. Batman, The Brave and the Bold, Season 3, Episode 7. And it looks like the rest of the episodes are pretty good, too. So I'm thinking about revisiting that when I get some time. Watch a little Netflix, a little Batman, Brave and the Bold. So that's my pick.
Yeah, you should watch that whole series because it's wonderful.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe. or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
And that's going to do it for this episode, this edition of the Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. I want to thank Retward von Dernberg, a composer from Germany, for providing our new closing music called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net. thecaravel.net. Thanks for joining us. Final thoughts, Brad, you're first.
I like turtles.
Say what?
Throwback. That's a huge throwback. Check out our back catalog. I'm sure that you'll hear Brad say, I like turtles.
I'm sure I've said it a time or two as well.
What's your final thought, Anessa?
We like turtles.
We like turtles. Yes, we do. We like turtles. How about you?
How about you?
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncasts.com.